Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I have my long-lost friend as my guest today, Gus Christensen. And Gus is going to talk about the New York Senate primaries in New York State. And I'm sure we'll talk about other things besides. So, Gus, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you for having me on the show again, Cynthia. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. So, to sum it up, I mean, in a couple words before we get to specifics, how do you feel the no IDC candidates are doing? The challengers, I'm sorry.
Sure. If I had to sum it up in a couple words, I'd say it's on, baby. We've got challengers on the ballot in every one of the 9 districts, just like we promised last year. The 8 IDC districts, plus the 9th district of Simcoe Felder, who caucuses directly with the Republicans. We have strong, solid, truly progressive, truly Democratic candidates on the ballot in all 9 districts, candidates who are never going to caucus with the Republicans, candidates who are never going to mislead their voters about what it is that they're actually up to when they go to Albany. And we've had legal challenges. Simcoe Felder had kind of a pathetic legal challenge against Blake Morris, just failed yesterday. Diane Savino put a legal challenge up against her challenger, Jasmine Robinson, failed last week. They're all on the ballot. They're all heading for the Democratic primary on Thursday, September 13th. Everybody should remember that date. We want more people to vote, and obviously New York State powers that be don't, because they put the primary on a Thursday, and they're not advertising that to voters at all. But I think the majority, if not all, of our challengers are going to win on September 13th. That's the real news here. The Democratic voters, progressive voters in general, are waking up to this, and we're actually now starting to see significant numbers of sitting elected officials, you know, core members of the Democratic establishment, are waking up. They're seeing that the challengers are the ones who are on the right side of history, not the crypto Republicans in the IDC and Simcoe Felder. And we're getting endorsements from all over the place. Just this morning, there were 4 members of Congress, sitting members of Congress from the New York City Congressional Delegation, Hakeem Jeffries, Yvette Clark, Nidhi Velasquez, Jerry Nadler. They all got up and endorsed Zelnor Myrie in Brooklyn today. The mayor endorsed him yesterday. We've had Corey Johnson, the Speaker of the New York City Council, endorse all of the challengers and, in fact, host a fundraiser for all of the challengers last week and host a phone banking event for all of the challengers this week. We're getting increasing numbers of city council members, members of Congress, members of the Assembly, the mayor, our New York City controller, Scott Stringer, has endorsed most of the challengers, held a fundraiser for Jessica Ramos and Alessandra Biaggi earlier this week. Everybody's waking up, and I think that's going to lead to a really exciting night on Thursday, September 13th. Mark it in your calendars and vote in the primaries.
Now, you know, I don't follow each individual state Senate race, but I watch what's going on the top of the ticket with Cynthia Nixon versus Cuomo. And I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a minute. It seems as if Cynthia Nixon is just there for window dressing. I really don't think she has credentials to be a serious candidate to beat someone like Cuomo. How do you feel?
Well, you know, I'd like to respond to that on a couple of different levels.
Go ahead.
You know, in terms of probabilities of winning, of course, Andrew Cuomo is the front runner. You know, he's a two-term incumbent. with universal name recognition and a $35 million war chest. So obviously Andrew Cuomo is the front runner in the race. But I believe that Cynthia Nixon is running a very strong campaign. I personally support Cynthia Nixon. Most of the people in our movement support Cynthia Nixon. I think she's running a very strong campaign. I think she's activating a lot of progressive voters and activists. If you went by number of people volunteering for a campaign to pull shifts, knocking on doors, phone banking, my guess would be that Cynthia Nixon has between 10 and 50 times as many volunteers as Andrew Cuomo. Now, I understand that volunteers are not the same thing as votes, but if you look at what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just did to Joe Crowley in Queens and the Bronx, there is a real potential to drive surprise victories in these kinds of low turnout primaries. You know, I'll mention that for a second. I mentioned it up front. We'd like to see more voters. We'd like to see new voters, especially in these primaries. But I think that the New York State political establishment has trapped itself in this system that was engineered to generate low turnout, separating the federal primaries from the state primaries, you know, doing them on unadvertised dates like a Thursday in September. These are systems that were set up on purpose to engineer low turnout with the thought that, you know, the voters who did turn out would be the same voters, small group of voters over and over again, who had elected the incumbents before and would always return them. Well, that's a system that's very vulnerable to upsets. You know, you've seen it on the other side of the aisle where David Bratt took out Eric Cantor, who was the number two or number three in the House Republican leadership about 4 years ago in a Republican primary in Northern Virginia. Tiny turnout, motivated supporters of the opposition, and a real chance for an upset. So I think we could see that from Cynthia Nixon all the way down, especially with Jumaane Williams, with Zephyr Teachout, and with a lot of our challengers, where, you know, the establishment may get its just desserts delivered to it for setting up a system with very low turnout primaries. Now, on another angle that I'd like, so that's how I would handle, you know, the odds for Cynthia Nixon. I don't think she's the front runner, but I think she's got a real chance to surprise a lot of people, and I think she's running an excellent campaign. Now, the other point that you made specifically, I understand as devil's advocate, that she's not qualified at some level to be governor. This is what we just have to tackle head on and say, this is wrong. This is not the way that we should be thinking about these things. I understand you were taking the devil's advocate position in saying that, Cynthia, but it's an argument that we hear a lot, and it's an argument that you hear about female candidates, not about male candidates, you know? I'll tell you myself, I ran for the state assembly. I recognize that's not the same thing as governor, but I ran for the state assembly 4 years ago. I had never done anything in politics before. I'd worked in private sector and business my entire life. I didn't have a degree in government. I didn't have a background in government. And I'll tell you the response that I got, and I lost, to be clear, I lost the Democratic primary. But the response that I got from the press and from people on the street as a wealthy, well-educated, tall white man was that I should be running for a higher office, not running for the assembly. Why wasn't I running for Congress? Why wasn't I running for citywide office? And I had absolutely no experience in government. In contrast, you have someone like Cynthia Nixon running who has a much, much deeper level of engagement, of activism, of policy understanding than I did when I ran 4 years ago that she has today. You know, she's been on the front lines, for example, of public school advocacy in New York City and New York State for over 10 years. You know, this is what she does when she's not on camera or on stage. She has a day job. She acts on camera. She acts on stage. And when she's not doing that, she's doing education policy, and she's doing political activism, and she's leading people towards a more progressive future with a detailed policy platform to get there. And people question whether she's qualified for office. there's a huge, huge strain of sexism, I think, baked into that. Which, to be clear, I'm not accusing you of, Cynthia. But I do think that that is a huge part of that general criticism of Cynthia Nixon.
Okay. Let me tell you why I made a statement. Maybe it was a little too harsh. My first comment is when she made the statement about she thought that Ithaca was the beginning of upstate, where if she lives in New York all her life, and most people who know a little bit about New York know that upstate starts in Westchester. And the other thing is the spelling of Ithaca. If you're going to be in a place, spell it right. Don't misspell it. And then my third issue is if she's running for governor, why was she down in Louisiana last week at the Netroots conference when she should have been up here stating her case?
Well, okay, so a couple of different things there. I think any campaign is full of missteps. You know, a campaign puts out a press release that misspells a city or a state. I don't think that it's offense to the person being misspelled. And I can say that as someone whose name is misspelled constantly in the press, not by you, Cynthia. But actually, that's not true, by you at least once. My name is misspelled all the time, and I don't take any offense. And I get that, you know, that you have geographic areas that may have a chip on their shoulder. But, you know, these are accidents, right? You know, Andrew Cuomo has been governor for 8 years, and while he may have misspelled fewer things, I'm highly confident that there are misspellings somewhere in all the reams of press releases he's put out over the years. But, you know, he's also done things like accidentally keep the Republicans in control of the state Senate for the last 8 years that he's been in the governor's mansion. So, you know, I think there are some sins that are minor accidents that people can overlook, and then I think there are some sins that are real and venal. So, you know, the missteps of an upstart, you know, new campaign are something that I can understand, and I think voters understand if they're even aware of them. It's the kind of thing that we who are, you know, political and media professionals who obsess over these details will see. I don't think that the voters in the end going into the polling booths are going to have their minds made up by that. In terms of where upstate starts, I tend to think it starts further up than Westchester. But I know that this is an open topic with no fixed line in on a map somewhere. So again, something that I wouldn't put too much focus on. There was a second part to your question, which was,
yeah.
Can you...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I missed it. I've already forgotten. The second part the second part to your question was...
You know what? In the course of our conversation, that kind of... Okay,
it's quite all right. The bottom line is that, you know, I think that Cynthia Nixon is very well qualified to be the governor of New York. I think she's a brilliant woman. I think that she deeply cares about policy and has deep understanding of policy, and I think she deeply cares about people and about the future of New York State. I am personally wholeheartedly supporting her, and, you know, I am cautiously optimistic that she's going to surprise a lot of people on Election Day. I think when you look further down the ticket for statewide office, you see, you know, some more exciting faces. You know, Jumaane Williams running for lieutenant governor, you know, not something that most voters spend a lot of time thinking about, who's their lieutenant governor and why. But I think that Jumaane Williams is running a great campaign and bringing great issues to the forefront. And I think that the contrast that Kathy Hochul is spending a lot of money to try to draw with Jumaane Williams is, if anything, backfiring on her, as well it should. You know, there was a lot of hubbub in the in the press this week and among, you know, political chattering classes like us, over the ad that the Kathy Hochul's campaign released a couple of days ago, directly attacking Jumaane Williams for having had a business, a small business. He tried to start a vegan sandwich shop or juice place. Not 100% sure of the details, but started a small business and it went bankrupt. And, you know, he had personally guaranteed, it sounds like he personally guaranteed a relatively large loan for a small business, nothing like the kind of loans that, you know, major financial institutions in New York were close to defaulting on back in the last financial crisis. But, you know, he had borrowed a couple hundred thousand dollars to start the business, and the business failed, you know, and he's defaulted on the loan. And the business went through bankruptcy. And he may or may not have had to go through personal bankruptcy himself, I'm not sure. But the, you know, the Hochul Cuomo camp looked at that and in their opposition research, and they said, this is the number one thing that we want to attack about Jumaane Williams. We want to say that he's bad with money, that he's had to declare bankruptcy, and that he's in large amounts of debt because of a business failure and a foreclosure, I believe, as well on his home. And you know what? In this day and age, in 2018, ordinary people, people who aren't members of the Democratic, let alone Republican Party elite, ordinary people on both sides of the aisle who know people who've had their homes foreclosed on, who know people who've gone through bankruptcy, and who know that they're not bad people, they're not dumb people, they're people who are living the lives that the vast majority of Americans have to struggle with. Voters look at that ad and they say, that is tone deaf. That is wrong. If anything, Jumaane Williams understands what ordinary people go through, things that Andrew Cuomo has never had to understand in his entire life, the son of a governor. He has never had to worry about any of this in his entire life. Kathy Hochul, a bank executive and now lieutenant governor of the state, they're angry. When someone gets their home foreclosed on, they're angry at the person who lost their home, not at the bank that took the home away. And voters look at this the exact opposite way. So I think this is going to help Jumaane Williams in a big way. I think you look down to the attorney general position, right? We had these shocking revelations on the, you know, the insane criminality of our old attorney general, Eric Schneiderman. We've got an open seat heading into this primary and a broad group of candidates running for it who have very rapidly gelled into specific roles in the campaign. Tish James is running as the insider establishment Andrew Cuomo-backed candidate. She is running to be Andrew Cuomo's attorney general, and she is not taking questions from reporters. She is not engaging with activists. She is hoping, fingers crossed, to coast to victory on the back of establishment support, not support from real voters. Then you look at Zephyr Teachout. Zephyr Teachout is running a campaign fueled by thousands of activist volunteers, fueled by real policy ideas. She is perfectly suited to be the next Attorney General of the state of New York, and I believe is going to win that primary. So I think when you look at the statewide primaries coming up in September, you know, can I promise that all of the activist-backed candidates, Cynthia Jumaane and Zephyr, will all win? No, I can't promise that. But I think, you know, some of them, if not all of them, are going to win, and I think that that's going to surprise a lot of people, which it shouldn't. But I think that it's going to drive New York in a better direction. And then when you look further down the ballot to what I'm focused on in the state Senate primaries, I think we're going to see a real earthquake, right? You know, we made a pledge at NOIDCNY at the beginning of 2017, over 18 months ago, we made a pledge to put real primary challengers on the ballot against all nine of these bastards, and I don't hesitate to say bastards, registered Democrats who caucus with the Republicans, eight in the IDC, one on his own in Simca Felder. We said, you know what? We got to challenge them. We can't let them coast to reelection and keep doing what they're doing without even a challenge. When we started this 18 months ago, we didn't really expect to win. We thought maybe Robert Jackson, maybe John Liu, the formerly elected officials with real name recognition, real track records, real ability to raise money, we thought they might win. But, you know, recruiting a whole bunch of first-time candidates to run against everybody else, our real goal up front was just to get them on the ballot and just to make sure that, you know, that these bastards in the IDCF couldn't coast to re-election again with no challenge. But you know what's happened over that 18-month period? People have been waking up. And the challengers that we've gotten into these races are running some amazing campaigns. And they are fueled by people, by the same people who are getting out there and fighting for the statewide challengers we went through, and by local people in their districts. Anyone who is a Democratic primary voter, and when I say anyone, I mean 80 to 90%, because we have actual good polling on this from making tens of thousands of phone calls across these districts. 80 to 90% of registered Democrats, when confronted with the true factual information that their supposedly Democratic state senator is caucusing with the Republicans, 80 to 90% of them are disgusted by that. Disgusted. And they want to replace their state senator. Now, are we going to win 80 to 90% of the vote in any of these districts? No. We've got to fight against a wave of spending, counter-messaging from the incumbents. They've got plenty of money, money that's illegal, and we'll get to that in one sec, but they've got plenty of money, and they're running ads, they're sending mailers, they're saying, the sky is red, it's not blue, up is down, we're the real progressives, we're the real Democrats, don't listen to those crazy challengers. And if you spend enough money on a message, even if it's patently false, you know, a lot of people are going to buy it. People don't have the time, the level of engagement to really dig into these kinds of local issues. Some people do, some people don't. You've got to respect people live busy lives. They have kids, they have jobs, they've got to go to work, they've got to go to school. You know, they can't spend all of their time like you and I do delving into the details of, you know, New York State Democratic primary politics. So we're not going to get 80 to 90% of the votes in these races. But I think in a lot of them, we're going to get 50 to 60, maybe even 65% of the vote in some of them. And I think that's going to surprise a lot of people, because we're going to replace a lot of fake Democrats with real ones. And the campaign is spreading even beyond these seats. For example, in Bushwick, in Brooklyn, you've got an incumbent state senator, Democratic state senator, in Martin DeLon, who's not a member of the IDC, but who's a terrible state senator. He's been in office in the city council and state senate for over 20 years. Doesn't do a whole lot except take money from real estate developers and from the IDC itself. And, you know, doesn't really represent the views of the people in his district. He says he does, like the IDC does, but he doesn't actually fight for tenants. He fights for real estate developers. And in Julia Salazar, a young, you know, truly socialist, DSA, Democratic Socialist of America, back candidate like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was, he's got a real challenger who we support and know IDC and around our True Blue New York movement and coalition across New York State. We support her. I think she's going to win. And, you know, I think that there's going to be a little bit of a revolution inside the New York State Democratic Party, where people are waking up and saying, hey, you know, the New York State Democratic Party says that it's in favor of all these things, universal health care, tenants' rights, full funding for schools, criminal justice reform, but it doesn't actually deliver on them. There's a massive gap between what's in the party platform and how much that addresses the concerns of the working class across New York State. The platform certainly does. But what they actually deliver in office in Albany is not that. It is what serves the wealthy and privileged. And we're hoping to change that. And I really think we can, and I think that these little primaries can do a lot of that.
Now, what do you envision this election season will have on future races?
So I think, I think you're already seeing this around the country. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, her victory over Joe Crowley was like a bolt of lightning. And it has energized, galvanized support for more economically progressive candidates in Democratic primaries all around the country than the establishment, wanted or expected. You're going to have ups and downs. I can't say that the most left-wing candidate in every Democratic primary is going to win, right? The Michigan governor's primary on Tuesday this week, an extraordinarily progressive Democrat with a lot of national support, lost to an establishment businessman candidate. It's going to happen. But, in a congressional primary in Michigan as well, in Detroit, an extraordinarily progressive candidate won. These primaries are going to be a mix. I can't sit here and promise that we're going to win all 8 IDC primaries, plus Blake Morris against Simca Felder, plus Julia Salazar against Martin DeLon. I can't promise we're going to win all 10. We're trying hard. We're trying hard, and it's more likely that we'll win all 10 than that we'll win none of them. I think it's very clear that we're going to win the majority of them, and we may win all 10 or very close to it. But, we don't have to win all 10 to win as a movement, to change the terms of the debate. We don't have to win every primary in Michigan or in Georgia or in other parts of the country. And by we, I mean the economically progressive left of the Democratic Party. We just got to win some of them, because until very recently, we weren't really winning any of these. There weren't really primaries like this, certainly not getting the kind of attention that they're getting now. I think that the message is getting out there that while the Democratic Party may be the center-left party in the U.S., and the Republican Party is increasingly the far-right party in the U.S., the Democratic Party is clearly left of the Republican Party. But that doesn't mean that it's a truly economically progressive party. It is a party that is run at its most senior established levels, where you have governors, senators, members of Congress who've been in their own current office all the elected offices that they were in prior to getting elected to the highest statewide levels. You've got people who've been elected officials for 20 years, 30 years, in some cases 40 years or more, right? These are people who have been deeply, deeply establishment-driven and captured people for years. And their view of what is possible and even what is right is increasingly deeply out of touch with the vast majority of actual people and voters on the ground in the working and middle classes of this country. The gap has only widened since the financial crisis 10 years ago now, right? Since the Occupy Wall Street movement arose, right? It is finally starting to bear fruit. The people who want much more deeply leftist economic policies in this country are finally starting to get their candidates elected and you got to start in Democratic primaries, and then they got to win general elections. People like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in 80% Democratic districts, all you got to do is win a Democratic primary. Same with essentially all of our, you know, state Senate districts in that we're fighting for in New York. You know, the state Senate is so deeply gerrymandered that all of these districts are deeply, deeply safe Democratic districts. All we got to do is win these primaries. Then we're going to win generals, and then we're going to help move the party and hopefully the state and hopefully the country in a more economically progressive direction.
Well, that sounds interesting, and it sounds like a great big chore. So, Gus, you know, we've talked, you know, several times in the past, and I hope to talk with you several times in the future. I'd like to have you give me updates from time to time on how the candidates are going. And most important, if any of your candidates do win in November and are sworn in January, I would love very much for you to come on the show from time to time. I'm letting all of the Focus on Albany listeners know exactly what's going on in the state Senate and how your candidates are making an impact. Would that be okay?
That would be okay. I would love to. The only thing I have to say is that you just said, Cynthia, if any of your challengers win in November.
Okay,
it's
I'm
not
sorry,
a question
when?
Of if.
When?
It's a question of how many and by how large of margins. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came out of nowhere to beat Joe Crowley with an 18-point margin. I think we're going to see some of those kinds of margins for some of our challengers, and I think we're going to see a couple more winning 51-49 kind of races. But they're going to win, and then they're going to win their primaries in September. They're going to win the general elections in November, and they are going to be seated in the New York State Capitol in Albany come January. And I think we could be in for a very different next 4 years politically in New York State than the last 4 years have been. The last 8 years have been, the last 80 years have been, and I am very much looking forward to keeping in touch with you and your listeners, Cynthia, and talking about it more.
Thank you so much, Gus. So you've been listening to Gus Christensen, and you are with No IDC. Why don't you give No IDC New York a plug?
Sure. Our organization is called No IDC NY. Easy to find online, www.noidcny.org, NOIDCNY.org. On our website, you can find out information about all of these challengers. You can find out how to support them financially. You can find out how to support them with your volunteer hours. And you can just plain find out more about them so you can get out there and vote for them. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you again for having me on the show.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. So if you like this show, Focus on Albany, like us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. And I want to tell everybody about my new project, and I'm hoping to make a documentary about the student loan debt crisis. So if anybody listening to me has student loan debt, or if there's businesses affected by student loan debt, I have a Twitter account called All Exits Closed. And I would like you to join the conversation there. So thanks, Gus. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.